Welcome to Synthaholics. This is your host, David Duncan, and with me is the illustrious
Aaron O'Brien.
Aaron O'Brien. Do you like to sing?
I do like to sing.
That's true, you do. We sing every now and then on the show.
Yeah, I don't really sing opera, though. I'm not really well-versed in opera.
Much to our listener's chagrin.
Yeah, well, maybe they're lucky that I don't sing opera to them. Yeah. Hey, this episode, we are talking about the Voyager episode Virtuoso, which is season 6, episode 13, and first aired January 26th, the year 2000.
In the year 2000.
Does that joke ever get old?
No, it won't. I mean, Conan kept doing it after the year 2000. Why should we stop?
That's right. We're just going to keep on going, even though it's 17 years or later.
We can only hope that it can never die.
It'll never die.
This week's kind of dry as far as Star Trek news goes. Anything for Discovery or anything kind of big on that end? Nothing too eventful for Star Trek. Although, For geekdom, today is a sad day. My first Batman, Adam West, he passed away today.
Yeah, it's pretty shitty. It's a pretty shitty thing. I mean, what is he, 88?
Yeah, I think so.
I mean,
he's definitely
it's getting up there. You don't know how long you have on this earth, but around that point, you're probably going to be cashing in your chips soon. So.
Yeah, it's sad. Like someone posted, I think Haley, she's in the Camp Kittimer group, friend of mine. But she posted a video, and I shared it to our Synthaholics group. It was William Shatner asking asking Adam West a question. It's like, where are you going to go when you die? He's like, the next Comic-Con.
So,
he had a really good sense of humor.
Yeah, he had a great sense of humor, and you know that he did. Obviously, the 60s Batman was so iconic, but then he went back and, you know, in Family Guy, he did the mayor there.
I love the mayor. I just love that it was Adam West, and then the mayor's name was also, he was playing himself, like a cartoon version of himself, which was just hilarious.
Yeah, it's great. Yeah, it's so much fun. So, yeah, he'll be missed. It's too bad that, that happened, but, you know, unfortunately, we're just losing a lot of people who are our heroes.
And just, you know, a lot of icons. It's just the icons that we grew up with, you know, because of reruns and whatnot. It's just, you know, by now they're just, you know, getting old. I mean, we lost Yvonne Craig, who was Batgirl, 2 years ago? I know we covered it on the show.
It was
pretty early.
Yeah. So. Yeah, exactly. And she was on our episode, Don't Run Off with Martha's Legs.
Yes, she was on Marta. She got blown to bits.
The Orion's legs got blown up.
They did. And she had very nice, very, very nice green legs.
They were wonderful green legs. I love those legs.
She dances very nicely.
And she was a great Catwoman.
Batgirl.
Batgirl, yeah, I'm sorry. I don't know what I was thinking. Yeah, but she's a great Batgirl.
There was several Catwomans though in the original.
Yeah, there were a couple.
Was there three or two?
I think there were three. I can't think of them all right now, but yeah.
And they were all really smoking good looking too.
Well, it was the 60s.
It was the 60s.
The swinging 60s. Yeah, oh, yeah. Baby.
Yeah. I'm on my second trip of Long Island iced tea.
Yeah, this guy's seriously putting them away tonight. Yeah, but we're going to miss Adam West. That's too bad.
Yes, so the first one was for Adam West, the second one's for me.
Yeah, and the third one's for me, too.
Yes, because I'm very sad I grew up with Adam West. I remember when we went on a vacation as a family, we'd go up to our grandparents' house, and like, I guess it just, we didn't have cable for a long time when I was growing up, so when we went to their house, I remember like it was like in the middle of the day, we'd always watch Batman, me and my brother.
Yeah, I am probably as like a 1 year old, 2 year old, I used to watch the Batman show. So
I was like a, you know, grade school, and then, you know, we'd go to the movie store, and my grandpa would rent us movies. I'm like, oh, screw Batman. So we'd watch like the Batman movie where all the bad guys turn people into powder to be vacuumed up with a dustbuster.
Sure, of course. Of course. What else were you going to do?
And you know, you can never forget the anti shark spray bat repellent.
Yeah, bat repellent. Yeah, that's great. Oh, that movie is so terrible. It's good.
It's like he dips his toe in the water and the shark's halfway up his thigh. It's amazing.
Yeah, it's
Adam West was a tasty man.
Yeah, I guess he was. Yeah, so anyways, that sucks. Bad day. Bad day for Batman.
Bad day for geekdom.
Yeah.
But we remember him.
But we do have something nice. We have a email.
Yes, we do have an email. It's actually in response to last week's episode, Holograms Gone Wild.
I love Holograms Gone Wild.
I do, too. We'll do more Holograms Gone Wild in the future, I'm sure.
This episode's a bit
Holograms Gone Wild. It's sort of Holograms Gone Wild, but it's only one episode, so.
Yeah, yeah.
This is from RT Harris. Hey, guys. Loving the show, but a couple of points I wanted to pull up about the Holograms episode. One, the paper, the holodeck uses a combination of holograms, transporter, replicator, and force field technologies. So the paper could have well been replicated, hence the reason it could go off the holodeck. This also explains the snowballs. And number two, the cube. I don't see why Picard was cruel. Moriarty wanted to travel and see the universe. Picard gave him that possibility the only way he could. What was the alternative? Lock him back in a holodeck for another 4 years? Thanks for the show and keep it up. Chef Richard R.T. Harris.
Oh, thank you. It's been a while since we heard from him.
Yeah, it's always good to hear from him. Being a chef is like, got to be crazy busy, so whenever he can get to us, he does. Thanks for the thing. And, you know, I am aware of the holograms and the transport and replicator. I mean, they randomly chuck stuff off the thing to show the holograms whenever they become somewhat aware that things can't exist out there. But then the things that they can bring off are just like, you know, just kind of material there for the plot. I mean, I figure the replicator should only really come into play whenever they're eating and drinking things. I mean, for any other reason, it doesn't make sense for them to be actually replicated. I mean, maybe snowballs, I mean, so it'll feel more real, I guess. But, I mean, the paper, I mean, that should have just disappeared. They've got plot issues that they just don't always think about. But, like I said, the original ending of Elementary, My Dear Data, they're talking about, you know, Picard knew Moriarty could walk off because the fail safes got messed up, and that's how the paper came off.
Well, they didn't go with that, so.
Yeah, so.
Well, the other thing is, there was the one episode, I don't remember what the Next Generation episode, where the gangsters were on the holodeck, and they walk off, and they're in the hallway for a moment, but then they start to slowly disappear.
Yeah.
I think it's the first season, but I could be wrong about that. But, I mean, there again, you have them get into the hallway, but then they don't live too far, you know, past the hallway. So it seems like they have, like, this the range.
The technology changes ever so slightly every time they talk about it or every time we see it.
Right, right. I mean, Ship in the Bottle, maybe the book thing is kind of like a dramatic effect when he throws the book through the portal.
I think that's exactly how it should look. Just chunk it off.
I think so too.
Like, as soon as it crosses like the door, it should just be gone. Like, it shouldn't even, like, yeah, that's what makes the most sense, because I mean, there's no hollow emitters out there.
But to address the fact that they put Moriarty and the Countess into the machine and just let them run through a simulated reality. I mean, I'm not saying that's the cruelest thing you can do to them, but I just think that, I don't know. I have the feeling that facing reality is far more interesting than some virtual reality. But I don't know.
What he doesn't know can't hurt him. And it would be cruel if, like, the first thing they can't counter was the Borg and they get assimilated in this weird virtual thing. That would be hilarious and mean.
That would be very mean. Yeah. Jeez. Well, the other thing I thought about is, like, how long do you think till Moriarty figured out he was in a simulation? You know, because he's technically a genius and he can, you know, best Data. So how long do you think till he figured out that, wait a second, we're just in a big simulated reality?
I mean, he'd have to hit the wall. So, I mean, I don't know. Like, if that thing can procedurally generate the entire Milky Way galaxy, I mean, that's that's quite a feat. It'd take a while to run into some walls.
I just think that not just that he'd run into, like, technical walls, but he just starts seeing things that would be like, wait a second, that doesn't make total sense. You know, I mean, maybe it's so seamless that he'd never figure that out. But
maybe
he's supposed to be a, you know, super uber genius. So,
yeah,
I don't know. I mean, did Sherlock Holmes ever figure out that he was just a fictional character in a book?
No, I don't think so.
So he's not that smart.
No, not that smart. So
just an asshole with a pipe.
Almost a genius.
Almost a genius.
Almost a genius. Not quite.
Just like us.
Yes. Yes. Almost with our Long Island ice.
Yes. Exactly.
But it's just interesting because I mean, like, you know, I know you said you had wanted to get that game, No Man's Sky. And No Man's Sky, I think people did the math on that. Like, if every single person in the world was playing it at the same time, it would still take, you know, 1,000, you know, like thousands to millions of years to see everything that the game has in it, because it basically procedurally generates something as big as the Milky Way. It's insane.
Well, yeah, I mean, the universe and the Milky Way just itself is vast. So, I mean, it's very improbable that you'd actually run into somebody. And No Man's Sky is a great idea. Unfortunately, it doesn't sound like it really hashed out. And the other thing is that, you know, maybe you don't want to be running into people constantly, but it would be cool to run into people here and there.
Maybe that's when Moriarty figures it out. He's in No Man's Sky, and he doesn't run into anybody ever.
Wait, did we run into a planet that's very much like this, except the animals are just a little bit different?
Like, no, there's no technology anywhere in the world. What? Anywhere in the universe? This is not right.
Seems a little weird.
That would be hilarious, though, if they just stuck him in No Man's Sky. That would be a mean joke.
it's just that's worse than being disembodied for 4 years inside the Enterprise computer system as a ghost.
Yes,
that's more cruel. That's more cruel.
Having been stuck in No Man's Sky for the rest of your life.
No,
that would be bad.
Yeah. Well, anywho, thank you for the email. That's very those two episodes are to me very thought provoking. And I really did enjoy our discussion on that. So I hope you did too.
Yeah, I hope you did too. And this episode, I mean, even though, you know, it gets on those themes a little bit, as I'm sure we will soon discuss.
Oh, yeah. Should we get into it?
Aye, aye.
Oh, no. Not again. All right. So we have the Voyager has picked up the Komar. And they're treating their injuries.
Can this primitive thing be any dumber? Go away.
I know. The Komar...
We're the rejects from the Lollipop Gang.
Yeah, they basically feel that... They basically feel that they're elevated above their, you know, the Voyager and their crew and their technology. That they're intellectually inferior. While they're being dismissive and kind of patronizing to everybody... the doctor starts singing, I've been working on the railroad, while he's helping them out. And they become absolutely fascinated by his singing. They've never heard anybody sing before.
It's really fascinating. They're all so dismissive and, like, hateful toward him for like the first 5 minutes. You start singing, and they're all like lined up and like giant puppy dog eyes. Like, what was that?
Yeah, that's cool. Do that trick again.
Do that again with your mouth.
And so they wanted to sing some more, and the doctor's obviously, yeah, he's always been a little bit like vain and wanting some accolades for what he does. So he sings them the whole, you know, I've been working on the railroad. And from there, he starts talking. They seem interested in the mathematical aspects of music, which there are a strong mathematical ties into music. Mm-hmm. But the doctor says it's really there to convey emotion and to for
entertainment.
Entertainment and fun. So they're so impressed. They want to hear more. So they set up a concert on the ship for the Komar to enjoy.
And they bring in some people from the Komar home planet.
Mm-hmm. And he sings an opera song by Giuseppe Verdi Verdi. And he sings this wonderful opera rendition. And after that, Harry Kim and the Kim Notes, which is a terrible name.
He gets it named after him. Good for you, Harry. You got one thing going for you, kind of.
They start doing a instrumental version of that old Black Magic, but it seems like their guests are not really interested in that. And Paris,
they don't care about music. They only care about singing.
Yes. So Paris urges the doctor to help them out. So the doctor jumps up on to in front of
up
him.
Up the tempo.
So,
up the tempo. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And he sings the version of that old Black Magic, which is a pretty fun version, seeing them do that. And from there, after the concert, they're basically, you know, everyone's in love with the doctor. The Komar are completely enraptured by his singing.
You've got to come down to the planet and do another one. Get more people to see you. We got to show you this to more people.
Yeah, and so they start setting up an actual concert down on the planet. We have a set design, a scene with Belena Torres and Tinko.
You're going to blind them with your bald head.
And I love that the doctress insults Torres, saying that she only likes a smattering of Klingon drinking songs.
Not even Klingon opera.
No. A smattering of Klingon drinking songs.
Although I do like the Klingon drinking songs better than the Klingon opera.
I just the visual image of Belena Torres like enjoying Klingon drinking songs is just hilarious to me. Like she's only got like five or six of that she really enjoys. Like it's on her iPhone, and she just has it on constant repeat.
I just don't see her liking Klingon drinking songs because she hates being a Klingon. And she hates everything about it.
I don't see her liking much of anything, but it's just hilarious to me just to her thinking her for doing that.
This is true. She does not seem to like much of anything except for Tom Paris for some strange reason.
I never understood that either. That seems so bizarre to me.
It didn't make any sense. I mean, her and Chakotay kind of made sense.
Mm-hmm.
But Tom, like, it just kind of came out of nowhere.
It definitely did. So from there, the doctor goes down to the planet and he's about to give his big performance.
And he turns into a clown outfit.
Right.
I went to one of those. I wonder if anyone cosplayed as that. Would anyone get it?
I don't think they would. I mean, I think they just think that you're doing a Puccini, so I'm not really sure. But anyways, so he's obviously a big success. And then next thing you have is a red alert from 709 in Astrometrics saying that the Komar are sabotaging the Voyager system. And when Janeway runs into it, she runs into Astrometrics to check it out. She finds out that it's just fan mail coming in for the doctor.
Like she said, this like I don't know how big a gigaquad is. I'm assuming it's larger than a gigabyte or a terabyte or an exabyte.
It's actually teraquats.
Teraquats.
Millions of teraquats.
Millions of teraquats. I don't know how big that is, but it's just like they must have very inefficient like email systems or something for them to take up that like for text to take up that much room. or they've got some crazy population issues on that planet.
Hmm.
You know what I mean? Like, it's text. I mean, like, so much text can, you know, how much text does it take to fill up gigaquads? You know what I mean?
I don't know. You're asking the wrong guy. So anyways, Janeway says, hey, you know, at least we knew the doctor first.
Oh, yeah, it's like, now we're the envy of all the Komar.
Yeah. So next, Tuvok gives Janeway a call saying that we're being overrun by fans, and they even, the Komar actually have haircuts like the doctor. They have given themselves a male pattern baldness haircut.
Just to have fun with that. And the doctor's signing mini holographic versions of himself singing some of his songs.
Sure. Absolutely. Basically, Janeway says, okay, you got to get back to work. You know, this is
playtime is over.
I do like how the doctor, when he's signing, he's wearing like a robe and an ascot. You know, he's got that typical.
Like a smoking jacket. And like,
yeah, exactly. Yeah, that typical, like.
But he's got the communicator on the front. I love that smoking jacket. It's so awesome.
We should both have smoking jackets like
yes.
that and record our podcast.
Whenever we do our video podcast, we just get matching smoking jackets. That would be hilarious.
With pipes.
Pipes, yes.
Smoking pipes and just talking. Oh, yes.
We'll have to get some of those like e-cig pipes and just like, oh, yes.
Mm-hmm. We should get some real pipes. I think it'd be hilarious. We're just smoking pipes and talk. Oh, my God. That would be so funny.
I think we should, but we'd have to do it somewhere else. Not here.
I know. It'd just be hilarious.
Get some harpsichord music in the background. Dun, 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 dun.
Yeah, like Masterpiece Theater.
Exactly. This is what I envision.
Or like Cookie Monster doing Monsterpiece Theater.
Monsterpiece, yes, but it'd be Trexterpiece Theater. With your favorite synthaholics, David and Aaron.
It'd be funny if, like, right after they introduce us, one of us vomits into a bucket.
Too much booze, blah! Like Family Guy style, where it's just like just everywhere. Yeah, that'd be awesome. We'll have to work up some special effects and get that going. And then it will just be like dribbling, and then like you know we'll just keep going.
Yeah, plans, people, plans. All right, so
things we're trying to do for you to entertain.
Smoking jackets, trying to get synthaholic, official synthaholic smoking jackets.
That would be awesome. I you know, I had that revelation a couple episodes ago where I talked with Erin Gray and she said she had that, you know, she was up for the part of Janeway. And I don't know if I'm ever going to be able to watch Voyager the same way again. Like especially in this episode, the way she's dealing with the doctor, like, you know, Erin Gray had to deal with like, two like multiple different kinds of robots and Buck Rogers. You had the Dr. Themopolis, who's just like a clock, but he's a robot. And then you had, you know, Twiggy, who was like a midget but a robot. Also played by Daffy Duck's voice, which is kind of funny.
Was it really?
I think Mel Blanc? Mel Blanc, yeah. That was Twiggy. Wow. So you know, I keep thinking about how she would have interacted with this episode and how much different it would have been with her doing it. I don't know. Voyager is never going to be the same for me again.
Yeah. It's a weird alternate universe to walk into.
Yeah.
Well,
it's the one I'm trying to live in, in my mind.
So the doctor goes back to sickbay, and Paris is attending to two Komar ladies. And after he leaves, the ladies seem to be harassing him, maybe a little bit. But the doctor doesn't go for their.
We want the full on doctor. We don't want a miniature doctor. I can't believe he just like no. I was like, so she Janeway just told him to get to work, and then he turns himself off. I'm not sure if he's working if he's turned himself off.
Yeah, well, I don't know.
The fans were warming up to him.
they were definitely, he could have some better relations with the Quomar.
Oh yeah, better with them than the than that, you know, horrible lady who tricks him later on in the episode. Mm. Because she never, yeah, she never liked him, because she was the one who was going, "Can you speak to the captain for us?"
Yeah, it's like you're talking to, like, when your mom is talking to a foreigner, and yeah, she thinks that if she just talks louder
and slower,
it's going to make the foreigner understand them better.
Yeah, it's just insulting. So it's just like, I can't even believe the doctor kind of felt that she was kind of like liking him, because she was probably the most degrading to him of the people who they first met. These two ladies were trying to jump his bone.
Right. Well, it gets only worse. It only gets worse with Tinku, because this lady, because she comes down, she surprises the doctor with a musical piece that she's written. He's very impressed, but he says he can't really perform the music because it's kind of leaves his vocal range. It's the mathematical equations are based on some two fractals, I guess, that are like overlapping, but his vocal range
way deeper and way higher pitch than they really should be.
And we get that performance later on,
which is awful.
It's just
so really bad.
Weird. Yeah, it's really weird.
Quomar are not good at writing music. Granted, they've only known about music for a couple days.
No emotion.
No, it's just all, it's just technical. I guess it's technical. It doesn't even sound that good. Who knows?
Well, that's the funny thing, is that they're very into the mathematical aspect of music and everything else. So, in fact, when the young groupies come to the doctor, they're asking him, like,
how far can you calculate pi?
Yeah, exactly. So, it's all very, all very mathematical.
They're like the math nerd. This is the math nerd planet.
They're the mathletes.
This should be where Carrie Kim should be hanging out.
Yeah.
Because wasn't he like a big math nerd? And like he's just like, oh, can you introduce me to the doctor? All the girls walking up to him. He's like, oh, yes, I'm from the Kim Tones. It's named after me. How would you not know?
I can do some equations. Yeah, baby.
I can do 1 + 1.
That's funny because Tinku says that she wants the doctor to stay, and she does bring up the 1 + 1 equation. What about 1 + 1?
And the doctor's like, oh, you mean you want to fuck me? You bone me? Yes! Rub my bald head!
Yeah. Well, the funny thing. Yeah, this great thing about it is the doctor felt the same way. So he had some feelings towards her.
No, he felt that way. She was just screwing with him.
Yeah, this is the strange thing. I mean, she really playing some head games, because she does like a 360 later on. So it's pretty weird.
I built a better sex robot who can sing better, too.
I'm sorry, it's a 180, not a 360. I messed up my math term. Sorry, everyone.
Quomar would shake their heads at us.
They would. Especially me. I'm so non-mathematical.
Yeah, math wasn't my strong. Although, like, it was weird. Like, when I was in, like 10th grade, I was good at doing some long division and some long multiplication in my head quicker than my dad could do it on the calculator. A year later, it just left me. I couldn't do it anymore. I was an idiot savant for a year.
That was great.
I should have gone to Vegas.
Until you shoved that crayon up your nose and your brain got infected.
It went out the other side.
So anyways, the doctor tells the captain that he wants to resign his commission. And at first she refuses, says you can't neglect your duties. And then the doctor brings up like
any other person.
The doctor brings up, what if Harry Kim fell in love with a lady? And I was thinking, like,
he did. We just talked about that episode not too long ago. And
he did the Nightingale, yeah.
And then they both
just, oh wait, no, it wasn't the wasn't Nightingale. It's the one where they're traveling in that big ship.
Yeah,
the disease.
Yeah. So yeah, the disease, and they just didn't get together because of TV budgets and
because contracts. Because of reasons.
Because of reasons. he should have left or she should have stayed. It just that whole thing didn't make any sense. There was nothing keeping them apart other than contracts in the, you know, the TV making business side of things.
Right. So so anyways, Janeway kind of like says, well, that's true, I guess. And she reluctantly agrees to his request. And so the doctor starts doing his rounds and saying goodbye to everyone, says goodbye to Paris, and has a very bitter goodbye with Seven of Nine.
Oh, she is pissed. She is like, why are you going to leave? This is not cool.
Yeah. Sort of like when you get your first girlfriend and all your buddies get kind of pissed off at you because you stop hanging out with them.
Yeah.
They're like, what are you doing with her?
It was just, you know, she was hurt, and you could tell she was hurt because of how curt. I mean, she's curt normally, but she was like almost harsh with him. She's like, just GTFO, dude.
Yeah, right. Exactly. Tinku calls the doctor and says, "Hey, I got a surprise from you. You got to come and see this." And so the doctor goes down, beams down, and she shows him her new holographic matrix that she has that can sing a far larger range than the doctor.
And she's like, "I thought you wanted to go with your ship, so this should be what makes you happy." It's like, "What? But I thought you wanted in my head and your thing and my other thing." Oh.
What about 1+1? What was that all about?
That's two. Don't you know anything, you stupid primitive matrix?
Come on. So anyways.
He starts singing the new higher notes, and Doctor just shuts it off.
It's like, no. This is just embarrassing.
He doesn't have any emotion. I put my soul into this.
So the Doctor
did Data ever claim he had a soul? That's interesting. I don't know if Data ever claimed to have a soul, but the Doctor is claiming to have a soul.
No, I don't think Data ever did. But the doctor is based off of
Dr. Zimmerman.
Off a different a person, so they might be just taking his cadence of speech and all sorts of things that, you know, maybe he doesn't actually believe in, like that he has a soul, but maybe it's just the way of speaking, you know, kind of thing.
That's true. But I just thought it was interesting to think about, like, that he's like saying, you know, this is from my soul. And he is less of a thing than Data is, you know, in a way.
Yeah. Right. Well, the doctor comes back and he asks B'Elanna Torres to give him a bigger musical subroutines so he can actually
delete my
medical database.
Yes, and she's like, "Well, if you
forget all of that,"
she's like, "Well, if one of your fans dies from a heart attack, you're not going to be able to revive him."
Right, and she makes a good point. She goes, "You know, I can change it into anything. I can change it into a teapot if you want, but it wouldn't be yourself anymore, would you be?" And he realizes this is, you know, why doesn't Tinku just like me for who I am? You know, my limitations included.
Well, I mean, you know, we saw them for the first 10 minutes of the episode. They don't like people who are less advanced than they are.
Right. So,
but it was really nice seeing B'Elanna being like cerebral in that moment. I was like intellectual. Yeah.
Introspective for a moment.
Yeah. That was really nice coming from B'Elanna, cause like, you don't get that a whole lot.
Not just running down the halls with a hatchet.
Yeah. Listening to her Klingon bar music.
Drinking songs.
Yes.
The six on repeat.
On her six different pads, because for whatever reason they can't store much information on those pads. They've got like millions of them.
Right. So anyways, and so the doctor comes out to his final performance of the Komar and decides to sing instead of singing Tinku's composition.
Because he cannot.
He can't sing it. He sings an old Neapolitan ballad about love lost, and you see a Janeway coming to tears because of his performance.
Which is interesting because of how, like, the resigning thing. You'd think she'd be kind of pissed at him, but like the performance moved her to tears, which is also really cool and really complex, emotionally to kind of see, you know, as an audience, as an audience watching this, and then, you know, for you know, Janeway to have that response, because I forgot that Janeway was even at this last appearance when I first saw it, because I thought they were going to leave and they had to bring him back or something, because it's been a while since I've seen it. But the song is called El Nido,
right? Yeah, and it's just basically kind of like a heartbroken song.
It's gorgeous, but it's the only song the Doctor didn't actually sing.
Oh, man,
Doctor sang all the other songs in this episode, which is, I mean, the Doctor's got a great voice. Let's see.
Well, next we get his facsimile. By Tinku, her version of the hologram Doctor, and he sings Tinku's work, which is basically like that. Basically like listening to dinosaurs sing.
And she's having sex.
What, she is?
I said banshees having sex.
Oh, banshees. Oh, I thought you said she's having sex. I didn't. You lost me there for a second.
It's a he banshee's going, and the she banshee's going, it's bad.
I can't believe you even went there. Man.
You're welcome.
Yeah. I can't even put my brain around that right now. Anyway, so the Doctor.
It's the Long Island stalking.
The Long Island iced teas are calling me. And how do they sound, Dave? Anyway, so the Doctor comes back to the ship and he has to be reassigned, or his duties
reinstated. And she's like, oh, really?
Yeah, she kind of got a little snooty with him. But anyways, she goes back, lets him come back to work.
And he's like, I'll even delete my musical subroutines. And she's like, no, you will not do that. And you'll resume all your activities.
Yeah. So, at the last part, 7 and 9 comes in, says there's another fan mail. And she basically reads this long, loving fan mail, and then at the end, she says it's written by her. So it's kind of nice.
Oh, it's really nice, and it made me tear up a little bit at this point in the episode, because it's just like, because at first she was like so, you know, against fan mail, and she didn't understand it. She was so pissed at the Doctor earlier, and then the fact that she kind of came back with this to make him feel better after he came back. It was a nice touch. And he was like, no, just delete it. I don't want to hear it. And she's like, let me. And so it was a really, really touching moment, which is, this is kind of one of the reasons why I always thought that Seven, the Doctor, would kind of get, because I mean, he's going, it was like teaching her through social etiquette, and they had that kind of bond. And it's just weird that it never turned into a relationship, because it seems like that would turn into a relationship more than her and Chakotay. It just, because that came out of nowhere for no good reason other than Robert Beltran betted the dared the producers to do it. And
you
like,
keep,
wow,
you keep bringing this up.
I'm bitter.
I'm picking that up.
I'm sorry, but just FYI, if you haven't heard that before.
That you're bitter?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah, probably. You're probably bitter?
Yeah, probably.
Anyways. And that's the episode wraps up there. So, Dave, we just talked about Virtuoso. It is a fun episode. But what was your thinking after you watched this episode?
It was, like I said, like a... every time I think this is the first time I've watched a Voyager episode since I spoke with Aaron Gray. So, every time I'm like watching it, I'm like trying to project how Aaron Gray was in Buck Rogers, and then like changing that to Voyager and changing that to Janeway, and how I'm just like, I'm trying to project myself on this universe that doesn't exist. So that's, it's watching Voyager is going to be interesting, going forward. for me. But yeah, like I said, I forgot that Janeway was at his last performance, and that was kind of moving, especially that, you know, she got teared up at that performance. That was one thing I had forgotten about it. One reason I wanted to come back to it was because last time we did Voyager, it was either between this and the
Sky Shaker,
Earthbringer. during that episode, the Earthbringer Light Shaker episode, because these episodes are actually back to back, and last time we talked about Voyager, it was either going to be this one or that one. So I was like, oh, let's just do this one next, because I remember them both being really good episodes.
Sky Shaker.
Earth Shaker, Lightbringer, Heartbreaker.
Blink of an eye,
yes. Oh, my God.
Oh, my God.
I'm so bad.
Those damn banshees having sex in the attic again.
How was it for you? Have you seen it recently?
It's been a long time, and I did enjoy watching it again. Especially on the heels of us doing the Professor Moriarty Holograms Gone Wild, brought up a lot of thoughts about hologram and their capabilities. That somebody actually wrote in that he would be pretty decent singer, and that he had a range of things that he couldn't exceed, mm-hmm. which was funny to me too. That like,
because
like,
you'd think a computer program would be able to do it every once.
Yeah, that they would put some limitations on him. So that was interesting. I don't know how I feel about that. It's like part of me sort of likes that, you know, someone put limitations on his vocal range. But then the other part of me is like, you know, he's a hologram. He should be able to rewrite whatever he wants to do.
Yeah. I mean, it's interesting. But I mean, but for him to be what his function is supposed to provide, the role his function is supposed to provide, is to be a doctor. So they probably would only give him the range he needs to communicate with most people.
Right.
So, I mean, I can see them being a constraint to his programming because, I mean, he's got to talk with humans, Vulcans, Klingons, Bolians. None of these people we know have, like, crazy high-pitched, you know, vocal patterns, or, you know, the universal translator just fixes it automatically. So, I mean, they probably only just, I mean, I can see why they only gave him a limited thing, because, I mean, the doctor's program was supposed to just be like, just medical, and he expanded his own program. And I guess he just never thought about changing his voice parameters before.
Yeah, I guess that's true. I don't know. I just, it made me think about, just the basic ideas of it, that they would put a limit on his vocal range. It seems strange, but, you know, part of me doesn't totally hate the idea. It's just, it seems an offbeat thing to do. But it's just it is a very well-written episode. It's fun to watch. There's really nothing in there that makes you like,
cringe or just like, oh my God, you know,
nothing moves slow. The jokes hit in great spots where they should be. And, I don't know. It's a really fun, it's a fun episode to watch. I mean, there's really nothing to dislike about this episode whatsoever. But it still brings up a lot of questions for me for
what is hologramdom? Like, is that life? And I do like that we did this episode after the Holograms Gone Wild, because that also brought up the question of what is life? What is sentience?
Right, right. And again, we're back to the whole thing is like, how does the hologram tied into the ship systems, is it enough to make itself its own kind of like brain, you know, that it can make up sentient life?
Well, like, it's interesting with the way the doctor progressed, because he was, you know, he's an emergency medical hologram. He's only meant to be turned on in like emergency programs, and like the thing that they had to leave him on for so long kind of broke him in a way, so that it sort of created life by breaking him, by breaking his mold that he was supposed to be in.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, right. Like, you know, so like, you know, in Elementary, My Dear Data, we had the Enterprise create something that could go on par with Data, and Data's like no one's been able to replicate the positronic brain in Star Trek. So right. Data is like the pinnacle of technology in Star Trek as far as cognitive ability, and so the computer of the Enterprise is trying to copy that and to put it into Moriarty. The Doctor is only meant to be turned on for every now and then, but since he's always on, he's tapping into more and more and more, and then he's also gets the ability to edit his own program. So I mean, it's just like because he's basically broken, and he has to expand beyond his initial programming. He does become sentient. And that argument with Janeway, he's like, you're just treating me like a robot, like a program.
Right. Well, we had this slight discussion. I mean, obviously, we were talking about it last episode, but within our own technology, with the next 50 to 100 years, that what if sentient life in AI emerged on its own through programming, and the programming expanding on itself. And you mentioned that you didn't think it could actually happen like that.
Well, I mean, like not anytime soon. I mean, 50 years is big, but I mean, I was mostly drawing AI from computer games and stuff like that. I was trying to make the connection between computer games and holodeck, which I mean, holodeck is just the evolution of computer games, basically. So, it would have to be a lot of technology to get artificial intelligence from now to that.
Oh, agreed completely. I just meant that, like, so could a computer program start building upon itself and give itself sentience?
Maybe if it's got access to the internet. I mean, I believe the original anime of Ghost in the Shell is kind of like that, like where a puppet master was just like a collection of different things on the internet that just woke up one day. And it decided to download itself into a shell. And so it's like sentience made from the net, from the internet, from all of our information running in the backbone of the world's internet. It just woke up one day. It's bizarre.
Yeah, no, I could see it happening, but yeah, I mean, it's all theoretical and just talking of things that have yet to be or maybe never will be.
I think something would have to put it into motion. I don't think it could just come from nothing, because I just don't think things come from nothing. Things need some sort of driving force to
make it start. What do you consider the Doctor's program then? Because technically he's just a computer program that's running to treat people. Not meant to be sentient, but somehow become sentient within, I don't know, maybe, I don't know how many episodes it took, but it wasn't very long. Within 10 episodes, he starts showing signs of being sentient.
But the Doctor's case was the thing that was, enacted upon him was that they just didn't turn him off. Like, he had to run consistently all the time. So, like, his programming wasn't meant to do that, so he had to adapt. And maybe that adaption...
I don't know. It seems kind of bullshit because, you could have, you could leave, like, your dishwasher on for a long time or, I don't know, it just doesn't come to life. I mean, you could leave your computer on. The internet is going on and on, from different servers. And, I don't know, it just seems an odd thing. That would just one day just be like,
But that's already hundreds of years in the future. Like, our dishwasher isn't hardwired into, a bigger computer, where it can, ask for information and go back and forth with things.
Nowadays, they're getting to that point that they are.
I know the refrigerators are, because I know they can tell you if you got milk or not, or eggs.
These dishwashers, and soon, and I think we talked about this before, but there will be toilets that will actually, analyze your feces and tell you what your nutrition's lacking and if there's any other issues.
You mean the Apple iPoop?
Yeah.
The iPoop. Yay.
I mean they're definitely working on things like that to install in our homes.
Yeah. I don't know. I mean, that's the only thing I can think of for the Doctor, how he became sentient, is just that he was left on and had to adapt to that not being used as a temporary thing.
And again, parameters, you know, like the last episode we talked about, wasn't there any kind of like parameters or safeguards put onto the holodeck to say that never allow sentient beings to be, you know, created?
I think it's interesting how holograms and stuff eventually evolve in Star Trek, where we get you know, Vic Fontaine, who was right. You know, programmed with the knowledge of being a hologram, which was very interesting. So that way he can't break and go crazy, because he already knows he can't leave. He knows he's happy to do what he's supposed to do, but he's also happy to interact with people as they are on the, you know, on Deep Space Nine or wherever his hologram is.
Right.
Which is, I thought was very interesting, because like all the times the hologram's gone, you know, break, that they finally designed one with that knowledge, which is, I thought was a really cool idea.
Mm-hmm. Okay. Switching gears. How about this? The idea here is a person, obviously the Doctor's within his own group on Voyager, is family per se, and how they kind of all dismiss his talents. Did you ever grow up with that whatsoever? Like, have that feeling of like, you know, my family doesn't take my talents seriously, or my whatever you might have that you think carves you out as someone special. Did you ever have that kind of notion, or even groups of friends that you kind of like, you know, grew up around?
I don't know if I was ever especially good at anything. You know, I always wanted to be an actor as a kid, and my dad was like, No.
You'll be starving.
You'll be starving. You'll never do that.
You'll be sucking dick for rent money.
Ah, yum. Protein.
I get money and I get food. What's the problem?
That's a two-for-one thing? Man.
What's the problem here?
Oh, wow. Sounds like a bonus. No. I mean, there's that, and, you know.
There's that.
I don't know if I'm especially good at anything that. What about you?
I mean, I've always been artistically inclined, and my parents, I think they recognized it, and they, you know, sent me to art classes and stuff like that. So, I mean, that's, you know, I don't think I've ever, I knew that I was decent in art. I don't know if I'm like virtuoso good kind of artist kind of thing. I mean, I was always pretty decent, but I don't know if I'd ever put myself in the level of genius level for any stretch of the imagination. So,
yeah, I kind of wish my parents would have like taken notice of something I did as a kid and like pushed me toward it. Cause I mean, I drew
ping pong. You're really good at that ping pong game.
Really good at the second deck game? Oh yeah, no. No, but you know, I drew a lot as a kid. I traced and I wasn't always the oldest of seven, but I mean, there was always other kids around, so I guess, you know, it wasn't like, oh, push you toward, you know, this or, you know, something. But I mean, I never like was like, oh, do these kind of classes. It was always like, oh, you should lose weight, so we're gonna put you in like karate or something.
But I don't like karate.
I like to draw.
Shut up, kid.
I like to do acting. I mean, like the first thing I did that I did the grade school musicals, and I always tried to get like a speaking part so I didn't have to be in the choir. So I mean, acting was something I wanted to do since I was really young. I don't know if I really wanted to do art from really young, but
you enjoyed it.
I enjoyed it, and after going to game design school and not learning anything other than how to make documents, I thought I should try to get back into art. So that's why I've been dabbling.
In it
here and there.
Yeah.
It was a very expensive school, and all I did was like write documents. I'm like, wow, it's. I don't feel like I learned anything.
I don't think I'm progressing.
I don't think anything's happening.
No, I mean, but
still
it's...
I don't have a game job. But yeah, I didn't really get pushed anywhere, but I also didn't get, you know, told I couldn't do, I guess, except for the acting thing. I don't know.
Yeah. So it sounds like the acting thing was something that you're more interested in at the time.
Yeah, but I got pushed away from that, but I didn't get encouraged to do anything else. Although my grandmother was like, oh, you should go into the Army. That way they'll pay for your college. And I'm like, I don't know if I want to do the Army thing.
I don't know. It's not, not my thing. I just want to act.
I don't want to get yelled at. I don't want to get yelled at. I don't want to have to, like, wake up at 4 a.m. to do PT before I do another day of, like, crappy, horrible thing. I don't know. I mean, props to people who can do that and, you know, that serve our country. But I'm just like, it just wasn't something that fascinated me.
Right. It wasn't anything burning inside you to do. Yeah. I don't know. It does seem that sometimes that people are a little dismissive of talent and what they have around, you know, around them. And until something other people start to notice, and then they're like, oh, hey, you're actually pretty good at that, aren't you?
Yeah.
It's a strange thing about like family and close friends that a lot of times they kind of dismiss things. And then when they see that other people are taking notice, they're like, oh, I guess they're kind of good at that.
Well, did I send you this video like a long time ago called it was a video on education called The Paradigm Shift? Where, I feel like I've sent this to a bunch of people. Maybe I didn't send it to you, but basically the gist of it was that, like, you know, our education system hasn't changed in, you know, 80-100 years. It's basically been the same thing. It's like, oh, let's put you through grade school, then we'll put you in a college, and because you need to go to college to get a job. And, like, why do, you know, they don't really pay attention to, you know, what people do or what kids, you know, are good at. They just put them, you know, separate them by age, and they just run them through the system. They don't take into account that, you know, people think differently, act differently, have different aptitudes at things at different ages or different interests.
You know, absolutely.
From young times, like, it would just be nice, like, if, I mean, this is like a pipe dream, but if the education system wasn't like this grinder, if it was more like, here, let's throw everything at the students, you know, early on, and then we'll track them by grades, and then we'll funnel them into classes that fit them based on what they're good at,
right?
Versus like making them do everything that some of the stuff they may hate. I think I read a story about like the girl who like created the Cats musical or whatever. Like when she was a kid, like, you know, they said she would have ADD, and like whenever they took her to the counselor or whatever, she started dancing. Whenever they put music on, they left her alone. They brought her mom in, and they showed her mom, and it's like, this is what she's doing. She's dancing. Like, this is what she does on her own. And so their mom put her in the dance school, and then she, you know, went on to write Cats. Like this story. But if this happened,
if this happened now,
they'd put the kid on Ritalin or some ADHD medicine, and she just go back to the grinder in school. You know what I mean?
It's funny that you bring this up, because my son has been going through the same thing. So not the dancing part of it, but it, basically they've said that he has ADHD and they want to put him on medicine. And me and my wife were like, I just don't see it. You know, it's like, I mean, he gets a little wacky sometimes, but don't all kids?
The point of the video toward the end is like, we live in the most stimulating time ever because of all the things that are Xboxes and Netflix and all sorts of things. And school is still boring. It's not flashy. It doesn't capture our attention because it's just a freaking grinder. Right. And then they say these medicines for ADHD is for, It anesthetizes the child. It calms them down enough. Like, it deadens them to the world so they can focus on the things that are quote unquote important, like school, because school's boring. It's not, school needs to change to capture people's attentions, to get them the things they want to do, not just make them do the same things over and over again. School's not working.
Well, I there's a lot of things to unpack there, and I think you got some excellent points, and there's a lot I agree with. I think there's two things. One, I agree that they should start taking people with their own aptitudes and things that they're interested and they should start putting them into those. So if you're more technical, you know, or maybe you're more hands-on, so like maybe you're better in trades. Like what if you'd be an awesome car mechanic
or a welder,
you know, or welder. Yeah. That kind of thing. Maybe that's your thing. Or maybe you're excellent in math. Maybe you're excellent in singing and dance, you know, those kind of things. Like why they should be looking for those things first or trying to suss out those abilities from the students.
It's like, why wait till college to finally do what you want to do? I mean, it's so ridiculous.
I mean, well, and by the time you get to college, you're more nervous. She's like, I need a career. I need to make money. Yeah. So I gotta go into finance. Well, maybe you don't like finance. You know, maybe you want to, you know, maybe you want to write a play like, or a musical like Cats, you know, that kind of thing. So, and there's people, tons of people all over the planet Earth, especially in America and most Western societies that are just like, people are just grinding out a life that they do not enjoy. There's nothing about it that's fun for them. It's bereft of any kind of, reward that you walk away at the end of the day. They go to their cubicle and they just, you know, they exist.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's how I feel a lot. And, you know, part of the reason I started this podcast with you was so that we could do something that we are passionate about and love instead of just having to sit in the cube and just do our 8 hours a day and just
right
rinse and repeat. Like, this is something that we both are passionate about and love to do and love to spend time with each other so we can spend time with all of the listeners. I mean, yeah, it's just, you know, this is so freeing to be able to do something like this.
And hopefully we bring a little sparkle to your life.
Some giggles to your stomach and your ass.
Sparkle, sparkle. But yeah, I think that's one issue with the educational system. The other thing is, like you're saying, I do believe that the old model of school, like, you know, sit in a classroom, is just damn boring. It's just there's nothing to it that's very interesting. But here's the other flip side of that is, let's say they have like the top minds and they write awesome like video game, educational video games that's educational but also stimulating at the same time. I mean, what is that going to cost the taxpayers? You know? I don't know. I'm just talking. But
I mean, I don't know if it needs to be a video game, but I just think like things need to change. Like by third or fourth grade, they need to like just, you know, siphon them into like the six or seven subjects that they're good at, and like, and then like give them like one or two electives so they can pick for themselves what they want to try. You know what I mean?
Or even like me, it's like I you know, when I went to college, I had to take two language courses, and I took Italian because, you know, I just decided to take, and I was terrible at it. It was a total waste of money. I could barely speak Italian. And it's just because they, you know, oh, you should learn a foreign language.
Yeah.
It had nothing to do with my degree. Nothing at all.
Yeah, it seems kind of silly. I don't know. But I just mean that the thing is, I mean, whether or not it's games or whether or not whatever it is, school needs to adapt at least a little bit and not still be in the same rut it's been in for, you know, decades. Right. And the thing, the thing is, if it doesn't start changing, it's going to get even further left behind because things are changing. Things are always changing, especially with the technology. Those change so fast.
Right.
I mean, sure, things we need to know maybe don't change, but I mean, like for your average everyday life, you don't need to know anything beyond like, you know, basic algebra.
Right.
I mean, like, well. I mean, no, you don't need like, you know, trigonometry or, you know, like third level calculus to do your taxes. I mean, you just don't. It's mostly just addition and subtraction and multiplication. Like you don't even need algebra for, you know, a lot of things. I mean, I'm not saying algebra is bad. I'm just saying like for most regular everyday life, I mean, like all these things you learn in school don't mean a lot.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's certain people that obviously, if you're going to certain disciplines, I think you should learn those things. But let's say if you are interested in just being a welder or a car, you know, auto mechanic, and that's what your life is, maybe you should just know your basic, you know, math and maybe a little bit of algebra, but you don't have to get into anything crazy. And Europe uses these models pretty often. It's like they give you the basic education and then they give you an elective. You can either, you know, get ready to go to college or you can go to a trade school where we get you ready for the workforce. And whatever that may be, if it, like you said, if it's welding, if it's carpentry or anything else, like, you know, be an electrician or something like that, because there's plenty of need for all of those jobs. And why go to college if you don't really need that?
I wish I went to a trade school. Like, I mean, at this point, I kind of regret going to college. Like, I wish I'd gone to the trade, like welding or blacksmithing or something.
I don't think they do blacksmithing anymore.
Oh, that stinks.
Yeah. But on my side of it, I don't dislike that I had my, my education through college. I don't like my, my tuition bill.
That's not fun ever.
But that aside, I mean, it's like, I don't regret my education. I just regret the money it cost, you know, to do that. So, but what are you going to do?
Well, I do it because I'm not using any of it. Yeah. I spent a year doing as many applications as I could every single week. I only got two interviews and only phone screens, really, for any of the game jobs I applied for. It was brutal. Utterly brutal. And I'm just like, and really all I learned was writing documents. I'm like, I've been writing documents, you know, since like second grade.
You know, all I learned was bitterness in my heart.
No, I was so excited to learn like actual hands-on like things, and like they barely had any hands-on things, and that made me sad.
Yeah. No, I get it. It's definitely that's a tough industry to get into.
Yeah, but we're proving our own way through podcasting.
Yes. So, Virtuoso, wonderful episode. Sparks a lot of different thoughts in my head when I watched it. But it's just a fun episode to watch, period. It's just, like I said, there's a lot of little jokes in there that are great. It's very moving at certain points, even heartbreaking.
Oh, sure. Definitely.
So,
I mean, Kate Mulgrew's performance was amazing. You know, she got me a little bit, but, you know, 7 of 9 really got me at the end, like where I started tearing up whenever she gave him that fan letter and was just trying to make him feel, you know, at home again. It was really, really a nice touch.
Right.
To the episode. And what we were saying before, I'm not against education. I don't want you guys writing in a bunch of emails like, oh, you guys are against education, you want people to be stupid. No, that's not what I want at all. I just think education needs to adapt to a more modern set of things and adapt to the children instead of forcing them to a grinder.
I think anybody who has like their head screwed on straight knows that education, there has to be reform in education, and it has to be modified for modern life, you know. So I think we're going through an old, like, you know, almost Victorian version of education that's not as plausible. I'm not saying that it's not all good. I mean, I think there's still good in there, but
sure. Like I said, we're not bashing education. Education's important. We need to be smart and be able to move on with things in life. We're just saying that things need to adapt to modern times, because the way it is, it's mostly set up in this. It's decades and decades old, and it's just going to get further left behind if it doesn't change.
I agree, absolutely. Anything else we should say about this?
Go watch Virtuoso if you enjoyed Holograms Gone Wild and enjoy those two episodes, and you like to think about life and what does it mean and are holograms life. This episode also brings up some of those questions and thoughts and feelings.
Do holograms have talent? Like America's Got Talent, Holograms Got Talent.
Robert Picardo's definitely got talent because he sang all of those songs except for the very last one. And those were amazingly done. Like, he's got a fantastic voice. I really hope we can have him come on the show and one day and talk to him. I would absolutely love to get to talk with Robert Picardo.
That would be cool.
What about you? Anything else?
Nope. I enjoyed the episode. It does, you know, bring up a lot of interesting ideas about talent and about the acceptance of talent and fame. And also just, again, holograms and being sentient. What does that mean?
Are they real?
Are they real?
Am I a real person? Tell me.
If you had to have a holo admitter, you're probably not. Sorry.
One day
I will be. I'll be back.
Like Arnold Schwarzenegger.
And we'll be back next week.
Woo. Oh, yeah. Sorry. We were supposed to have Michelle Specht on this week. Schedules have been messy to figure out. We're still trying, so don't give up yet. We're still working on it.
Don't give up on us.
Don't give up. We're still working on it.
And don't give up on Harry Kim and the Kim Tones.
They're coming out
with a new hit.
A new hit. It'll never be out because they're in the future.
Yes, and it's going to be called the new song. The big hit is called "I Shit in a Bucket."
Well, two banjos were doing it.
The doctor saved my ass,
as he normally does.
Yes, right.
Well, Dave Wilkes.
Dave Wilkes, you remember the name?
Dave Wilkes. He does our intro. All the other music you hear is provided by Warp 11. You can find them at warp11.com or Warp 11 on Twitter. You can find us online at syntholics.com. You can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com. On Twitter, you can find us at Syntholic Duo. Me personally, I'm David_J_Duncan.
I'm on Blackbird2004 on Twitter.
Guys at GS Davis Art. You can check out our Patreon at patreon.com/Syntholics. If you think the show's worth a couple bucks, you can throw it our way. Helps keep the lights on. And hopefully helps get us out to cons one day to see you.
Yes, you were talking to you right now. And also, if you don't have a buck to throw our way, we do appreciate it if you go onto iTunes and if you rate and review us. If you can give us 5 stars and leave a couple nice words about our episodes, we greatly appreciate it because that does help us climb the charts in the iTunes algorithms.
Yes, even also, if you don't listen to us on iTunes.
yeah, go on to iTunes.
Go on to iTunes, because I mean that's where a lot of people do listen. And if you're extra awesome, leave them on the other platforms you listen on too, so that all the platforms can know how great we are to you.
Yeah, and then in addition to that, if you know somebody who loves Star Trek, if they like podcasting, if they want something a little different than the their old boring repertoire of podcast, tell them about Syntholics. Tell them about Aaron and Dave. We're talking about Virtuoso this week and about singing. I mean,
and about school.
And about school.
Trust us, it's more interesting than it sounds.
And that they're drunk.
Oh, yes.
Long Island iced teas drunk.
Woo.
So, yeah, let people know about the our shows. We definitely appreciate any word of mouth. It definitely helps letting people know about our show.
And as you heard earlier, we do love reading emails. So you can email us at syntholics@yahoo.com.
Oh, email us. And if you can give us a written email and on your smartphone, if you have an audio recorder, you can record any comments and then just attach it to an email and send to us. And then you can actually hear your voice on Syntholics, and we will respond to your voicemail as well. So,
yeah, we love being able to do that for you guys. And it's also great just hearing feedback and hearing what you guys think about the episodes and putting out where we're wrong or where we may have missed a step. Because, I mean, we do. I mean, I always, like, usually after I listen to an episode, I'm like, oh, man, I should have said this about that. So, I mean, it happens to us all. So if you think of anything, maybe it'll remind us of something we wanted to say again, and we can get that also out there for you guys.
Right.
So exactly. Either way, it's a lot of fun. So we hope you enjoyed this week, your weekly shot of Star Trek.
Yeah.
Live long and prosper, one and all.
You're the best drinking friend I ever had.
All right.
Woo.
Now we're done.
Captain.
Now the penis jokes can start.
Uh-oh. Flippity flappity.